Good evening, everybody. Nice to see you. Yeah, thanks. A bit of crowd participation going on, that's good. Encouraged this evening, so if you have anything to say, let me know. But yeah, it's lovely to see you. If we haven't met, my name's Lex. I'm the student worker here. If you're a new student, I'd love to meet you at the end. Come and say hi. We've got chip butties as well, so worth hanging around for. But yeah, tonight I am finishing off our series, The Road Less Travelled. Over the last couple of weeks, we've kind of been looking at this series and looking at the kind of the gnarly truths and the hard-hitting realities of what it actually means to follow Jesus. Because in the Bible, Jesus actually says some pretty hard stuff. And sometimes it's really easy to get hung up on that, but actually sometimes it's really good to look at it together so we can actually delve into it and see what it means. Because actually following Jesus is worth all of it. So a quick recap for you in case you weren't here. In the first week, Philip was talking about the narrow gate, and Jesus was talking about this, and we heard it in the trailer. Can someone sort out this iPad for me? It's just not the right thing. Perfect. So Jesus was talking about the narrow gate, and he said this: "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate, broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many enter through it. But small is the gate, and narrow the road that leads to life, and only a few find it." Very tempted there in the middle to just go into the deep voice of the man in the trailer, but I stopped myself. I thought that was probably inappropriate. But so Jesus tells us that actually following him is like walking a narrow road. When everyone else is walking the wide road, actually following Jesus looks like living your life differently, setting yourself apart and saying, I'm not going to go with the crowd. I'm going to take the other road, the road that's maybe a little bit harder, that's maybe a bit more difficult, but actually it's the road that leads us to Jesus, that leads us to life, and therefore is 100% worth it. So we looked at that in week one. And then in week two, we looked at Jesus again, where he says, whoever does not take up their cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. Again, quite hard hitting, like quite hard to unpick that and see what Jesus is actually saying. But what he's saying is when we follow him, actually, it's about laying down our lives for the sake of him. It's about saying, Jesus, I want to put your wants and your heart and your desire for my life above my own. I'm going to pick up my cross and I'm going to lay down my life for you. But actually, again, the kind of punchline of this is that we find life when we do that. And that's what we all want. We want to live that life that's full and exuberant. So actually, it's difficult, but it's worth it. And so this week, we're going to be looking at the way of love. And for this one, Jesus says, a new command I give you, love one another. And that maybe feels a bit weird fitting into this series, right? Because actually all the others are being quite hard hitting and difficult. And this one's like, oh, nice, cool. Yeah, I can do that. It feels like a nice kind of little cherry on top. And maybe it feels a bit weird fitting into the series because we look at that and we think, actually, isn't loving one another, isn't that the broad road? Isn't that what most of us are trying to do? Actually, whether we're Christians or not, we're all trying to just be loving, good people. We want to love one other people. We don't want to harm other people. Actually, surely loving one another, how is that the narrow road? How is that difficult? Actually, it's when we look at this verse through our kind of 21st century lens that we look at that word love and we think it means just that, just kind of being nice to each other, kind of living in harmony alongside one another, not talking bad to someone's face, forgiving them if it's not too much of a stretch for you, just generally being nice to them, not doing them harm, right? But actually, that's not what Jesus is talking about in this passage. Actually, the love that Jesus is talking about is a bit of a narrower road. And so in the Bible, a lot of the New Testament was written in Greek. And in Greek, they have four different words for love. And the first word they have is philia. Philia is the kind of love that you might say, oh, I love getting a takeaway pizza. Or I love my dog. Or I love colouring. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe you do. But things that you just, you like. It's philia is where we get the word like hydrophilic, things that like water, things like that. So that's just kind of like a, it's a like. When we say I love in that sense, it's that word that we're using. The next word is storge, which is kind of a bit of a deeper level of love. Actually, this is maybe like the bond that you have with your family. This is maybe the bond that you have with a really close friend. Actually, it's that kind of deeper level of love that you feel really connected to them. But actually, neither of these two words is what Jesus is talking about. The third word is eros, which again is not what Jesus is talking about. This word is the kind of erotic, passionate love that you kind of see a lot of in cinema. Actually, again, this is not what Jesus is talking about. The word that Jesus used in this passage that we looked at is this final one, which is agape. If you've been around church for a while, I'm sure you will have heard this before. But agape is reserved for that highest form of love. It's the highest form of love, and actually it's the type of love that we rarely see in our world. Actually, we see quite a lot of the other three, but we don't see a lot of agape. So it can be quite hard to know what that looks like. What is Jesus saying when he tells us to agape one another? Well, thankfully, the Bible also has a little explanation, a little outline of what agape looks like. If you've been to a wedding, I'm sure you will have heard this Bible verse read. But actually, it says this. So you can swap in love for agape. But it says, love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. And so actually, when we look at that, maybe the road becomes a little bit narrower. Actually, that's a little bit more difficult to do. All you have to do is look at the first one. Love is patient. All you have to do is stick someone behind the wheel of a car and perhaps you're not quite so patient anymore. I was telling the people at the morning service this morning that I've realised I'm quite a sarcastic road rager. It's like, oh yeah, come on in. Yeah, pull out there, that's fine. Or you park like that, that's not an issue for anyone, that's fine. And yeah, we're not very patient. Or what about it's not easily angered? Or it keeps no record of wrongs. How many of us can hold our hands up and say, yeah, I never keep a record of wrongs. I forgive people like that. Actually, how many of us could, within the last week, look at our life and say, yeah, I was always patient. I was always kind. Didn't envy anyone. Didn't boast about anything. Actually, loving in this way, it's really quite difficult. I know for me, I feel like I haven't had the best week. There's nothing like preaching on love to realize how bad you are at it. And one of my favorite moments of this week was actually on every other Monday, we've started doing free student lunches. Me and my colleague thought it'd be amazing to be able to give out free student lunches, to invite students into the church, and to share a meal with them and to tell them about Jesus. So we decided we'd do this. And on Monday, it was the first one. And we were setting up and we were like, oh, how many people do you think are going to come? 30? That'd be cool. In the end, we had 200. It was wild. They were like flooding into the building. And I was like, I've only made soup for like 50, I don't know. I was praying like, Jesus, multiply the soup, multiply the soup. And then the soup ran out. And then there was a massive queue of people. And so someone was like, okay, I'm going to go and buy more tin soup. Just like, hold on, you stay there. And so we were like frantically cleaning up. There's like people everywhere. It's actual carnage. And someone comes up to me and was like, oh, I've got a lecture to go to. Do you know how long the soup is going to be? And I was like, I'm really sorry. Like, someone's going to have to get it. I don't know how long they're going to be. And then we've got to heat it up. So I don't know. And he was like, okay, but like, how long is the soup going to be? And I was like, I don't know. I don't know. And he was like, oh, could you just ask the kitchen? And I was like, I am the kitchen. Go away. Leave me alone. I don't know when the soup is coming. But actually, that was an event that we set up to show people the love of Jesus. And actually, I wasn't being very loving in that moment. I wasn't nearly as patient as I could be. And actually, for all of us, love is a really difficult thing to do. It's really easy for us all to admit that. Whether it's actually your sibling just knows how to push your buttons, really knows how to wind you up, or that person at work who is just completely incapable and really winds you up because you could do a better job than them. Or whether it's one of your friends who just, the way they treat you, are like, that's not okay. And I really want to, like, I don't know. But we all have people in our life. Actually, whether it's people that we like, whether it's people that we don't like, we find it really hard to love. And actually, when we look at this, when we look at agape, the type of love that Jesus is asking us to do, the road gets a little bit narrower. And actually, the other thing about agape is that agape is the type of love that is reserved to talk about God's love for us. And for us here who've been Christians for ages, we know that the whole Bible is filled with God's love for us. But actually, if you're not a Christian, what you need to know is that the Bible is so full of examples of how much God loves us. Actually, right from the word go, God creates this amazing world for us to live in. He creates so many intricate details. He creates water so that we can hear it, so that we can drink it. He makes food grow out of the ground so that we can eat it. He makes it taste good so we can enjoy it. And he makes us in his image to look like him so that we could be in communion with him, so that we could be in relationship with him. But then actually, as the Bible carries on, as humans, we kind of mess it up. As I said, we're not very good at loving. And so that happens in the Garden of Eden. Actually, we mess up that relationship. But God doesn't stop trying to be near us, actually. He's like, here's a plan for a tent of meeting that you can make in your community where I can come and be with you. I really want to be with you. I want to be in loving relationship with you. So here's what you can do. Here's how we can be together. And here's how I can pour out my grace and my mercy on you. And that actually, it reaches a climax, which is what our faith is all centered around, where Jesus comes to earth as a human. He's God, and he completely empties himself into a human being and comes and lives among us in our mess. And he walks with people, he talks with people, he eats with people, he gives people the time of day that other people don't give any time to. He gives them love and attention. And at the end of his life, he's hung up on a cross for us. He's given a cross to carry through the village, and then nails are driven through his hands, and a crown of thorns is put on his head, and he is hung up and made a mockery of, because he knows that when he does that, he'll defeat death and he'll be able to be in relationship with us forever. Actually, there's a verse in, I think it's Hebrews, and it says, for the joy set before him, he endured the cross. Actually, for the joy of knowing that we would be his, that we could be in relationship with him, he died on that cross for us. And so when Jesus says, love one another, he's saying, in the same way that I have, you go and do that. Which suddenly leaves us thinking, at the beginning when I thought this was the nice, easy one, maybe it's not quite so easy. Maybe actually it's actually more narrow than what we talked about last week. It gets so narrow. And so how on earth are we meant to love people like that? We've already kind of agreed that loving is really hard, and we're often not very good at that. But actually Jesus knows that. He knows that we're not good at loving people. But actually, how do we do it? Do we do it by just trying harder by actually pulling up this passage and thinking, okay, this week I'm going to write this on my wall and I'm going to be patient and I'm going to be kind and I'm going to just grit my teeth and do it. I don't know when you were younger, if you had a fight with your sibling and your parents said, say sorry, and you really didn't want to, but you know, when you say sorry, you'd be able to get out of it. And you say, I'm sorry, through gritted teeth. Actually, that's not sorry, isn't it? It doesn't really count, because actually love is the action, but it's also the heart behind it as well. It's not a singular thing. So we can't just grit our teeth and try harder. So what do we do? The key is in this little next bit. So if we pull up the passage, it says, a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. As I have loved you. It doesn't say, as I've told you, as I've written in this book, as I have shown you. It's as I have loved you. And it's not as I have loved others. Or it's not as well as I love, I want you to go and love others. It's as I have loved you, go and love others. As I have poured out my love on you, as you have experienced that love, then go and love others. It's only from that place of being poured into that we can pour out to others. We get to experience that fullness of God's grace over us, of him saying that no matter what you've done, I love you because you're mine. I made you. You're made in my image and therefore I rejoice over you. We get to experience it. But it's only when we experience it that we can pour it out to others. Actually being told about it and kind of knowing it in our heads, that isn't enough. It's like if I explained to you my favorite meal and said, go and cook it, and you'd never tasted it. That would be really difficult. You'd really struggle. But actually, if you tasted it, you might be able to think, oh yeah, I know what goes into that. I know what that's like. Have you experienced the love of Jesus? Maybe you have, maybe you haven't. Whether you've been a Christian for years or whether you're brand new to this, actually, we all need to experience that love of Jesus. And we're going to have a bit of time at the end to pray into that. But I know I need more of that in my life. And you know what happens when we experience that love? For some reason, the shops at the moment have decided that it's Christmas time, which personally I find incredibly offensive. I went to IKEA a couple of weeks ago and there was Christmas stuff everywhere and it was still September. It was outrageous. But at Christmas time, we get all of these Christmas films that come out, the classic Hallmark Christmas films, which start off with a lovely, beautiful young lady. She's probably a florist or she works in a chocolate shop or something. And she lives in a little, lovely little town. And then suddenly this angry corporate businessman comes in and he's going to like shut everything down. And then they meet in a turn of events where they don't know who each other are. And actually she's bad mouthing him. And then she's like, oh, that was you I was talking about. Anyway, and then the whole thing unfolds and there's probably a misunderstanding in there somewhere. And then they go ice skating and it's lovely. And then they fall in love. And what happens? He changes his mind and he doesn't shut down her lovely little business, probably moves to the town, blah, blah, blah. But he changes his mind because that's what love does. It changes us. It can soften even the hardest of hearts. We know that and we've seen it in our world. And actually, there's a story of Zacchaeus in the Bible, which shows us exactly the same thing. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. That is a reference to a kid's song if you went to Sunday school back in the day. But Zacchaeus was a tax collector and he used to collect people's taxes. But when he was doing that, he would take a little money for himself. So he would essentially steal from people. And one day Jesus is walking by and he climbs up in this tree so he can see Jesus. And Jesus stops and looks at him and says, "Hey mate, I want to hang out with you." Jesus gives him the time of day. Jesus gives him the dignity. And Jesus just loves him. And he goes to his house for dinner and they just hang out. And Jesus gives him just a little bit of time. But actually, as a result of that, Zacchaeus is like, "I'm going to give half of my possessions to the poor because I've cheated people out of this. And whoever I have cheated, I'm going to pay them back four times what I took from them." Because love changes us. It softens us. It transforms us. It makes us more able to love others. Even this week, as I've been my tired, grumpy, non-loving self, as I've come into the presence of God and been reminded how much he loves me, even when I'm not being very loving to others, it's been such a reminder of, oh yeah, Jesus, you love me even when I don't deserve it. And therefore, the people that I feel like don't deserve my love, I can give them love because you give me love when I don't deserve it. So I can give it to other people when they don't deserve it. All of that sounds lovely, right? All of that sounds lovely, just kind of basking in God's love and sitting there and slowly becoming a more loving person. But we are talking about the narrow road. It's nice, but it's still not easy. Sometimes experiencing God's love means opening up all of yourself to him. All of the bits that you're not so proud of, the things that you did that you weren't happy with, the bits of yourself that you don't want others to see, bits of yourself that maybe you don't want to see. To fully experience God's love, it takes bringing all of that into his presence. And that can be a really uncomfortable thing to do. But I promise you, when you're loved for your good and your bad, it's so much more powerful than just being loved for your good. So yeah, it's difficult because you have to open up all of yourself to him. But also, transformation is a really slow process. The love of God can transform us, it can soften us, but actually the world can harden us. Actually, it's a two-way process and we have to kind of stick on the path of transformation, of coming back into the presence of God's love day in, day out and saying, I want to be transformed to be a more loving person. It's a slow process, and in a society where we love a quick fix, where we want to be a loving person by the end of the week, that's not how it works. It's slow and steady. But also, being in the presence of God and knowing we're loved by him doesn't immediately make us a more loving person. The best way I can describe it to you is that being in the presence of God and being filled with his love allows you to have the choice. When we're not filled with God's love, we only have one choice, and that's to do things our way. And that's normally the selfish way, the way that is best for us. When we are filled with God's love, we're given two choices: our way or God's way. And you still have to choose. And sometimes that can be really difficult and really painful, but you get the choice. God gives you the choice. It's like when I come home from netball on a Monday night and I'm wet and I'm tired and hungry and I see the pile of recycling on the side or the pile of washing up, and the voice in my head says, "You could put that out." And I get to choose whether I want to put the recycling out and love my husband, or whether I just want to eat my dinner and watch TV. And I'll be honest with you, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It's still a choice. It's still difficult. But actually, we get that choice. Jesus frees us to choose to be loving. But so why would we bother? Why would we bother walking down this narrow road of loving other people? Well, the last bit of the verse says this. When you do this, by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. When we love one another, that is how people know that we are Christians. That is what makes us stand out, because they look at us and they think, it's impossible to love like that. Like we agreed at the beginning, it's impossible to love like that in our own strength. They must have something greater than them helping them. It points them to something else. And we get to love them, but it's only a shadow of the love that their Father in heaven has for them. And we get to point them to that. And I don't know about you, but I have so many friends who desperately need to know the love of Jesus. And often they're probably not going to come into a church building. They're probably not going to come in and sit down and hear someone preaching or listen to worship music. But actually, when I love them, after being filled with Jesus's love, hopefully that will point them to someone who loves them. I've got a friend who's really struggling at the moment because her boyfriend's messing her around a bit. And I'm like, dude, you just need to know that you're so loved. And it's a privilege that I get to be Jesus to her in that. And we all know that the world needs more love, right? As we agreed at the beginning, that is something that we all know and we all know to be true. But actually, without the power of God, we lack any power to do anything about it. But as Christians, because we have Jesus and we know Jesus, we gain that choice to be able to do something about it, to bring more love into the world, to bring more Jesus into the world. And we know that's what we need. So again, it's a narrow road, but it's definitely worth it. So we're going to take a bit of time to pray, because with all this stuff, I can stand up here and talk about it, but actually we need to put it into practice. We need to make it real in our lives. So we're going to take a bit of time to pray, and actually we're going to start by just inviting God's presence to come. And we're going to give you an opportunity to ask God to show you how much he loves you. And that might be a word in your head, it might be a Bible verse, it might be a picture, it might be a sensation. We're all different, and so we react differently, and God connects with us through our uniqueness. So I can't tell you what it's going to look like, but just be aware for what God's doing. So yeah, I'll pray and then we'll have a bit of time to wait for God. Yeah, Jesus, thank you that you are love. That you love us so much. That throughout history, you have been dying to get close to us. You have been falling over yourself to be in relationship with us. Jesus, we're so grateful because we know we don't deserve it. We know we fall so far short. But we're so grateful that you love us anyway. And right now, Lord, I pray that you would come and show us, come and show every individual in this room how much you love them. And if you feel comfortable, you could just hold out your hands in front of you, like you're going to receive a gift. And just say to God, can you show me how much you love me? And this is his favorite thing to do, so I'm sure he will.